Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Merkle Media.
Start looking at people like they don't matter. I'm waking up to the fact, more than a little bit shallow. I'm lost and this hole, but I don't wanna. I'm lost and this hole, 'cause I'm just trying to
good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas from Free the Rabbits, and how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? I want to say thank you to everyone who has been going to Spotify and going to Apple Podcasts and hitting the follow button in addition to listening to the show. It's such a small thing to do, but it helps the show grow immensely. So for that, I want to say thank you. And if you haven't hit the follow button on Spotify or Apple, make sure you do that now. Also, if you've been a follower of the show and you haven't given it a five-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go do that now. And if you're on Apple, make sure you write a great review to go along with the five stars. That is another way to help the show grow and get deeper into the algorithm, which allows it to get even more people to follow us. If you're new to the show, take a listen, and if you enjoy it, go give it a five-star review immediately afterwards. Also, for the people who have been asking how they can donate to the show financially, we have several ways to do so. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits, where we have monthly memberships, or you can give a one-time donation. If you're following on YouTube, we also have memberships there with different tiers, all of which have custom emojis you can use while on the channel. And if you can't donate financially, just you donating your time is the best gift possible to the show. And for that, thank you so much. Keep sharing the show, everyone. Now, Let's get into it. What's good, guys? We are back with another episode of Free the Rabbits. And this week, we're going to do something interesting. There's been a very hot topic going on in the conspiratorial community, in the UFO community. And I really thought that I needed to also speak my mind on this subject as well, because I've seen a lot of back and forth of what people think about this. And you've already seen the title, Are Aliens Demons? And I'm going to go through today systematically. We're going to talk about what they could be. And at the end, I'm going to give you what I think they are. And it's probably not what a lot of people think. So it's going to be an interesting road. Some of this is definitely going to be on the back of a lot of research that I've done on the subject. So some of the things that I'm going to bring up today, you may have heard before, but hopefully you're going to hear it in a different way. Plus, I've got brand new information. And it's really about tying all of this research together that I've done, because I've done so many different sections of what we would call interdimensional beings or extraterrestrials or demonic entities, fallen angels. There's so many different variations, and we're going to talk about different ones today. And then at the end, I'm going to give you what I think about all of this. And I think it's important for us to look at this subject in a way that makes sense as a whole, because a lot of times we get caught up in trying to label things that we don't really know what these things are. And I want to say this, that very similar to many cryptids out there or other supernatural entities that we've seen throughout history, one size doesn't fit all. And I think we're going to see a little bit of that today. And we're going to start today with the first arena that we can look at is aliens or extraterrestrial life. And extraterrestrial life is life that originates from another world rather than Earth. No extraterrestrial life has yet been scientifically or conclusively detected, according to the powers that be. So we don't really know what they have, what they've seen, what they've actually studied. And I've talked about in length all kinds of covert projects that are connected to these types of beings, these extraterrestrials. And again, I have my thoughts on some of this, but I want to talk about some of the extraterrestrial races here when we're talking about extraterrestrial life, what they say they do. And again, you may hear some things that send off a lot of red flags. That's cool, because we'll talk about that when we get to these other portions, because again, this is just what is one of the labels of what these things could be called. And I'm going to talk about several different labels that these things are called before we get to the end. And then we can look at it as a whole and say, okay, what do we really think about these? Now, one of the interesting extraterrestrial races is called the Sasani, and it means beings of light. And they're a humanoid extraterrestrial race who live on the planet Isasani near the Orion constellation, approximately 500 light years from Earth. And they are said to be a genetic hybrid between Earth human and Zeta Reticulans, which would be gray aliens. Interesting how gray aliens do pop up in a lot of these other alien races as well. And just to let you know, we will talk about grays today, but that won't be until the end of this episode. So don't expect to hear a whole lot about them early on, except their connection to some of these other races. And the Sasani, they possess this combination of the best characteristics between humans and Zeta Reticulans. They have the Zeta's ability for telepathy, longevity, sensitivity, scientific and intellectual capacities, but they have what humans have when it comes to vital, emotional, sexual, and physical aspects. So it's interesting when we look at some of these alien races that seem to be hybrids of us and other alien races and what that constitutes when they're brought together. Very interesting. Now, these are 5 feet tall. They have grayish skin, just like the grays. Only the females have hair. Most of the time, it's white. and their heads aren't as big as Zeta Reticulans, but they are bigger than humans. Now, the first representative of the Sasanis was an alien called Bashar, and it means messenger. And Bashar also, interestingly enough, is derived from the Arabic letters Ba, Shin, Ra, and it also has the same linguistic derivation as the Hebrew word basar, which means, guess what? Flesh, meat, or human body. So again, we will get towards the end and we will talk about some other ideas about what these extraterrestrials could be. Now, the first time that Bashar came in contact with a human being was with a guy called Daryl Anka, and he actually claims to channel this entity, this extraterrestrial called Bashar, and he's actually the cousin of the 1960s teen idol Paul Anka, which, very interesting connection to music industry, Hollywood, and extraterrestrials. We see this a lot, as a matter of fact. Now, what Bashar has told people through Daryl Anka, and he talks about that their planet, Isasani, and it means place of living light, and it has approximately 230 million inhabitants. Although a significant number of the population actually inhabits these giant-sized ships that are all over the galaxy, apparently. And there are no major structures on the planet. And according to Bashar, it's mainly park-like and very green. And the entire planet's surface is used for recreational purposes. So again, it's this idea that extraterrestrials have evolved more than humans have, to the point of where they have figured out how to create a utopia, especially how to use the resources on a planet correctly so they're not exasperating the planet itself. It's also said that these Sasani, they experience everything in the present. They don't look at past experiences and they don't look to the future. They just stay in the now and they don't separate themselves from the experience and perception, but they exist in the unity of all things and they actually create their own timeline. Very interesting that they've evolved to the point to where they don't even look to the future and they don't look to the past. They are ever present and they stay in the present. It reminds me a lot of Kundalini meditation practices and many other things that a lot of these extraterrestrials teach humankind. And these guys are no different because obviously Daryl Anka is channeling Bashar through him to then speak to people. And you can actually go on YouTube and find many of his sessions where he is speaking to other people with this extraterrestrial Bashar speaking through him. Now, one of the alien races that they learned the most from was the Pleiadians. And we're going to talk about the Pleiadians too, because they are a major one that shows up when we're talking about alien races. Now, the Sasanis are moving from the fourth to the fifth dimension, very similar to how we on Earth are supposedly moving from the third to the fourth dimension. So they are an entire dimension ahead of us. And they are said to actually exist on a different frequency of reality itself, and they can move in and out of parallel realities, and they can move 700 years in the future or on separate timelines. So it's very interesting that they have evolved to this point that they can actually move in and out of time and basically exist or not exist at their own will. Also, everything is free on their planet. Their lifestyle is very spontaneous, very joyful, ecstatic. Again, utopia. They have now created a utopia. And they also emphasize, interestingly enough, the harmonic number 3, even to the point of having three-sided scout crafts, triangular shaped. And also, their symbol is a triangular symbol for communication. We're going to talk about that a little bit later when we get into some of the other aspects. I did find it very interesting, though, that the number 3 is used, because the number 3 is a very important number in occult practices, and it represents divine harmony, synthesis, and the culmination of duality. 1 + 2 = 3. And it also symbolizes the unfolding of divine power in the material world. So also used in occult rituals, the number 3 is used in invocations, curses, and charms to increase power, many times used when they're repeating a phrase 3 times. And we also know in mythology that triplets are used when we're talking about the 3 fates, which are Greek, three primary gods, Babylonian, Anu, Bel, and Ea, and the three realms, Norse, Asgard, Midgard, and Niflheim. And let's not even forget Christianity when we're talking about the Holy Trinity, which I believe that the number three is a holy number, but I also think it's been inverted and used in many of these very nefarious ways, which I've already mentioned several of them here. So apparently, the Sasani use the number three as well. Also, this is a pretty wild one, and this will tie into later on what we're talking about. The Sasani's way of creating offspring between a male and a female, they do it outside of their bodies without any physical contact via an energy bubble infused with their idea and harmonics of the higher mind and spirit consciousness, where this child is formed from a single point like a seed. This occurs because a body form is located inside our spirit and not the other way around. And that sounds ominously similar to how a homunculus is created. And we will get to that. It will be mentioned in this episode. It's going to have to be later on. But this is how children are created with the Sasani. Now, according to Bashar, the Sasani civilization is also working on ascending their planetary consciousness to an even higher state. And what's interesting, too, is they're connected to this triad with Arcturus and Polaris. And we will talk about briefly the Arcturians as well. And I think it's very interesting that they are in contact with humankind because they need humans to help them ascend, and they're going to help us ascend in the process. And I don't know how much they would actually need with us when they have already created this utopia. But according to ufologists and abductees and people who have been in contact with the Sasani, they have nothing but our best interest at heart. And this is what Bashar is trying to do too, especially when he met Daryl Anka. And matter of fact, Anka, in 1973, he had his first encounter with a black triangular UFO, and he quotes, "I had a close-range broad daylight sighting of UFOs with witnesses present both times. At each sighting, we saw a dark metallic triangular craft about 30 feet on each side. There were three blue-white lights, one on each point and one orange-red light in the center. The craft in the first sighting was about 150 feet away, and the second sighting only about 60 feet away." So 10 years later, after those sightings, because he started having more UFO sightings, he started having more paranormal sightings, and then he met a channeler, and through this practice, he became in contact with this extraterrestrial presence called Bashar. Because again, they have evolved past us, so their consciousness is able to connect to us in a spiritual way. Now, for people who have been listening to my show for a long time, and you're probably wondering why I'm talking like this and I haven't, you know, hit the gut punch on what I think about this stuff. Again, I'm giving you the layout of what these different things could be before I tell you what I think about this. Because right now we're just in this idea that they're completely extraterrestrial. They are the product of higher evolution. And this is why that they're able to connect with us in a completely different way. Now, we've got the Arcturians, and the Arcturians are very interesting. There is so much going on right now in the social media spaces about Arcturians. There are even Bibles that are written that are connected to Arcturians, and they are highly connected to New Age movements. And they are said to be an advanced extraterrestrial civilization from the Arcturus star system, and they wish to share their knowledge and wisdom with the citizens of Earth. And they are described very similar to the Sasani. They are other dimensional advanced star beings, and they are said to be very loving, peaceful beings, and they're willing to communicate and work with any soul that wishes to travel with them to a higher level of consciousness. They're great people. You know, they're great aliens, and they're here to help us. They're here to help us advance. And if they can connect to us telepathically, then they can help us do so. And Currently, they are said to guard the Earth, and they're helping to heal the planet while raising its vibrational energy. And you're going to hear this a lot in New Age circles. You're going to hear this a lot in the occult circles and anything that's tied to star seeds, which I've talked about in length on this show. So if you're looking for star seed talk, go find those episodes, because we're not here to talk about star seeds today, even though there will be some crossover blending when it comes to hybrids, just because of why these extraterrestrials may be in contact with us as well. And the Arcturians are very similar to communities that are found on Sirius, which we've talked about Sirius. Matter of fact, we talked a lot about Sirius on the last episode. Andromeda, Orion, Pleiades, Lyra, and Antares. And we'll talk about a couple of alien races that come out of those planets as well. And the origins, and this is interesting, they're based on the readings of Dolores Cannon. And Dolores Cannon was an American author, self-trained hypnotherapist, and publisher. And she was a huge leader of the New Age movement and promoter of fringe theories. And this was related to her findings of the Arcturians. There's another interesting character, though, that comes up when it comes to the Arcturians, Edgar Cayce. And I've talked a lot about Edgar Cayce in this show, and I find it interesting that Edgar Cayce is touted as this big Christian in certain New Age circles, but Edgar Cayce was very, very prominent in bringing the Arcturians to the forefront with Dolores Cannon. Matter of fact, he called the Arcturians the most advanced community in the universe. And he said the community was most similar to what? The divine. Matter of fact, the star Arcturus was mentioned by Cayce in more than 30 of his psychic readings. This started in 1928. And he actually saw Arcturus as a gateway to the higher realms of consciousness. And that can help the human evolve their minds and transcend. So I don't know about you. I don't know if that sounds super Christian. And again, Cayce was very involved with things such as supernatural healing, reincarnation, afterlife, past lives. He talked a lot about Atlanteans. Now, he did deny that he was a spiritualist or he was communicating with spirits. However, he was in contact with extraterrestrials and he saw their planet and he saw them. So again, these are extraterrestrials. They're not spirits, according to Cayce. Very interesting stuff. Now we're going to slide on to the Nordics slash Pleiadians, because sometimes they get a little bit tied in together. Now the Pleiadians will have different looks depending on the person you're talking to. Some people seem as very tall, bluish skinned, almost typical to what you would see in a great alien. Big eyes. However, sometimes they are more in tune with what we consider with Nordics. However, they would have dark hair as opposed to Nordics with the long blonde hair. And the Nordics are considered tall whites. And that's the name that was given to them. And they're also said to hail from the Pleiades star cluster. And sometimes they're considered Pleiadians as well. So again, it just depends on who you're talking to and what experience they had, because sometimes these extraterrestrial races will talk about being hybridized versions of even themselves with another alien race or with a human being. And when we're talking about Nordics and even Pleiadians to some point, straight blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skin, but they're typically in the 7-foot range. They're very tall. This has led some people to tie them into a very Nephilim idea. But again, we're just talking about extraterrestrials right now. And they are said to have the abilities of telepathy. They're also very benevolent, very generous with people. But very interestingly enough, they have been spotted many times in many different situations, whether it be an abduction scenario or just seeing the Nordics, grays will be with them. And I find that interesting because typically grays don't have any kind of benevolent nature to them. And they seem to be lurking around a lot of these other alien races too. As a matter of fact, all of these alien races generally look a lot alike. They have very humanoid characteristics, big eyes. However, the Nordics are a little bit more like us, but they have some of those alien traits. Now, one of the first people to supposedly come in contact with these in the 1950s was George Adamski, and he was a Polish-American ufologist, and he was the first to report these Nordic beings. And in those 1950s, he took several photographs, and he said they were of the alien spacecraft and they were of these Nordic alien space brothers. And he actually said he took flights with them. Now, we'll definitely show the pictures up here on YouTube. I believe I've shown these pictures a long time ago in one of my earlier episodes when I was talking about George Adamski and his connection to the tall whites, these Nordics. And most people think these pictures were hoaxes. They think he was a charlatan, a con artist. The only problem is most people that have checked these pictures, even though they call them hoaxes, have yet to prove why they were hoaxes. So most of the time when somebody's skilled enough, they can look at a picture and they can decipher whether or not that it is actually a hoax and why it's a hoax. They have yet to do that. They just have said that he's a charlatan and a hoaxer, which he could be. It's very possible. I don't say that in this weird world that we play in, there aren't hoaxers and grifters and people who try to prey on others. Absolutely. I think it happens now too. But at the end of the day, it's interesting when they have yet to really pinpoint how the pictures are fakes or fraudulent. So it lends me to think that they could be true. Now, are they exactly what he's saying they are? I don't know. And I think that's the thing that we may never know. Now, another interesting extraterrestrial race are the Yayel, and they're not talked about a whole lot, and they're actually considered to be the closest to humans that there are, and they're said to be a hybrid race, a mix of human DNA and Sasani genes. So we already talked about the Sasani, and they said they're the most spiritually evolved, and the Yayel are actually the blueprint. They're where we need to get to. So this is what the Yayel say when they abduct humans, as a matter of fact. And it's very interesting why they say that they abduct humans. So they force abduction because the existence of their Earth was destroyed and it's uninhabitable. So they came to our Earth and they started abducting certain humans who agreed to help, but after they abducted them, so their souls could incarnate on Earth because they lost the memories of what they had before on their planet. So this is why they say that they abduct humans, because humans have to help facilitate their retrieval of memories. And again, they're great aliens. They're just here to help us. They're highly evolved. They're showing us how to get to their level, because the Yayel are this ultimate spiritual extraterrestrial. And they're only abducting us for our own good. And there's nothing bad about it. Hey, they pull up, hop in. If they say they're a Yayel, hop in. You know it's going to be a good time. I promise you. I promise you it is. They said it, so you know that it's true. So another very interesting thing about the Yayel is that they are often associated with advanced technology. Now, we know that specifically the Nordics that met with Admiral Byrd and some of these other alien races, we'll talk about other alien races who are highly advanced with technology and how evil they are and how that they want to take over the Earth. And the Yayel are also very much attached to advanced technology. But here's the thing. It's technology that works with nature. They've actually mastered the art of combining science and spirituality, creating tech that aligns with universal laws. So it's all good. So the technology they have is great. So they only abduct out of benevolent means. They have the best technology ever, so we should trust every bit of it and we should take it on board. And they are literally the pinnacle of evolution. They are mostly our DNA mixed with Sasani DNA, which brings them to a spiritual point that no other alien race has. And as a matter of fact, another thing that is also interesting about these Yayel, you don't actually need a flying disc to connect with them. Even though they have this advanced technology, your meditation is said to be your best bet. Very similar to Daryl Anka and his connection to Bashar and a lot of people's connection to these extraterrestrials. You just meditate and you connect with them through your mind, and they will bring you a sense of peace or clarity that is unmistakable. And this is according to people who have been in contact with these Yael, because again, they have so much of our DNA in them that we have this unbelievable connection to these Yael. So one of the major things that the Yael are now telling mankind is that our quarantine is almost up and our karmic debt is almost paid. And for the first time in human history, we will be at the precipice of building a grand civilization. Now, this is what the Yael are telling people who they're abducting. They're telling them that we are on the precipice of a grand civilization, the connection between extraterrestrials and humankind, and we will all live harmoniously together. Now, the Yael started revealing themselves back on March 13, 1997. And the reason why I bring that up is one of the largest UFO sightings in history took place when the Yael flew their V-shaped spacecraft over several American cities, including Phoenix, Arizona. So we all know about the Phoenix Lights, and it's said that the Yael were the ones that were manning this craft. So trust them. According to the Yael, trust everything they say because they have nothing but good intentions, because they have more of us in them than any other alien race that's out there. So we're going to look at a few more alien races. We're going to look at these mantids. Now, the mantids are interesting. They're more insectoids. They look like praying mantises. Generally speaking, they're on two legs, but they have the mantis-like head. A lot of times they're green in color, but they are always typically described as a part of medical procedures alongside grays. And these beings also have large black eyes, elongated heads, and communicate telepathically. So you're going to see them generally always with gray aliens and not with good intentions. So then we have the reptilian slash draconians, and they are referred to as a humanoid creature with reptilian features, scales, cold-blooded, and people like David Icke have talked about them being shapeshifters and that they have secretly infiltrated into humankind. And we know that they've been talked about in many myths throughout the centuries, and they are an interesting one. Some people think that they are extraterrestrial, especially when we're using words like draconian and they're coming from other worlds. Some people think they come from inside the Earth. Some people don't think that they are from this realm at all, and they are moving interdimensionally. But for this part of the argument's sake, they are from another planet, and they are here, and they have nothing but evil intentions when it comes to mankind. Now, we've got the Orions. Now, these are very ancient and very advanced, and they are called the Preservers or Masters, and they seeded life, and they were a massive, powerful force throughout the galaxy long ago. So they are typically seen as the ones who started life here on Earth. Now, we do know that many different alien races say they are the ones that have seeded life here on Earth. Even great aliens have said this. So just take it with a grain of salt, because they all say this, but this is always the MO of these Orions. Now, we have the Blue Avians, and they're super interesting because they are described as tall avian bird-like humanoids with blue feathers or skin, and they're known for spiritual wisdom, empathy, and advanced technology. And they are also very benevolent, higher dimensional beings, and they are associated with secret space programs generally. And people like Corey Good and David Wilcock have talked about them. And I know people have their thoughts on Corey Good and David Wilcock and what they have to say and what they brought together with all of these different alien races that they've talked about. Were they forthcoming in everything when they brought it forth? Did they take some of this information from other people who had previously had these experiences? We won't really know, but I can say that the Blue Avians have been talked about by more than just Corey Good and David Wilcock. So these Blue Avians have had contact with many different people, but they are a little bit different than these humanoid ones. However, they do have very humanoid features to them, but they are bird-like. They have feathers and they have a typical bird head. Now we've got the Andromedans, and a lot of people have heard about Andromedans, and this is all through UFO lore. And they are tall, slim, blue-skinned humanoids with psychic abilities, and they travel in massive starships, and they have this crazy healing technology. And again, spiritual evolution. They have evolved spiritually to a point that they are trying to help us get to this utopia as well. And a movie that I watched recently that had to do with the idea of Andromedans was a movie called Begonia with Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons. And it is a conspiracy theorist, mind-blown film. And I can tell you, my whole cap was peeled back by the end of it. It's pretty wild. But the idea of Andromedans are talked about in there because Jesse Plemons is a big conspiracy theorist and he believes in all this weird stuff, and it kind of spirals into a really strange film. So then we have the Lyrians and the Lyrian aliens, and they are also very important when it comes to the idea of starseeds and the idea of extraterrestrials. Now, these are feline featured race from the constellation Lyra, and they have very interesting makeup. They are more animal hybrids, and they are humanoid, but they have very feline characteristics. So people that have had contact with them, sometimes they look like huge house cats that are walking on two legs. Sometimes they look more lion-like or tiger-like. It just depends on who's running into them. So again, these are just a handful of some of these extraterrestrial races, but all of them have a very typical theme that they are trying to get in contact with us to help us and to help facilitate this merger between extraterrestrials and humankind here on Earth. Now, we're going to move into the next phase of what these extraterrestrials slash interdimensional slash supernatural beings could be. And we're going to talk about the Fae. Now, a fairy, fae folk, is a type of mythical being or legendary creature generally described as anthropomorphic, found in the folklore of multiple European cultures. And this is including Celtic, Slavic, Germanic, and French folklore, and you'll even find it in Native American folklore, and I've talked about that plenty already, specifically when I did my Pukwudgie episode and the idea of the Pukwudgies and them being this Native American fairy. And the thing about fairies, we don't know exactly where the idea of them came from. They've just kind of always been around, or at least looming in some sort of capacity. Now, most people talk about that fairies could either be demoted angels or demons in Christian tradition, and in pagan belief systems, they are spirits of the dead. And in some ideas, they are prehistoric precursors to humans or spirits of nature. So this is just some of the ideas that they're called. Now, we know that there are different offshoots of fairies. We have goblins, gnomes, and some of this is talked about specifically with Philippus Areolus Theophrastus Bombastus von Hohenheim, who is Paracelsus. And I've talked about him plenty on this show. And we know that he wrote a book called A Book on Nymphs, Sylphs, Pygmies, and Salamanders, and on the Other Spirits. And he talks about these four categories of elementals, which are gnomes, undines, sylphs, and salamanders, and they are equated to earth, water, air, and fire, these elementals. Now, these would also be connected to the idea of the fairies, specifically the air or the sylphs, because they have a very fairy nature to them and their connection to human beings and being able to marry them and have children with them. Very similar to the gnomes as well, and the undines, which would be more of your mermaid type people. So this is Paracelsus' idea of these fairies, but they operate in a very similar manner of what? Trying to connect to humankind to do what? Have some sort of hybrid with them. It's
very similar to what we just talked about with these extraterrestrial races. We have these elementals that are trying to perform the exact same thing. So Paracelsus talks about this in length in his book. And again, I've done a two-part series on this. So if you want to hear me break down that entire book, and even giants and dwarves, which are giant versions of the gnomes that he talks about, I go into that verbatim on that. Now, if we're looking at some of the etymology behind fairies, we can look at the Latinate, which fae, which fairy derives from, and the English fae, it actually means fated to die. And if we look at the old French of fae, it actually shifts from fated or doomed or accursed. So I find that interesting that when we look at some of the etymology of where fae or fairy comes from, it typically talks about something that has been cursed or something that has fallen. And I think that we are definitely moving this episode along with these different ideas of what this could be. So here's another very interesting fairy type. So we have these fairies that were found on Orkney, and Orkney, or the Orkney Islands, is off the north coast of mainland Scotland. And it is also called the Orkneys because there are several of these islands that are connected. Now, there are these fairies that are seen on these islands, and they were described as short in nature, dressed in dark gray, sometimes seen in armor, but always with this gray countenance. Even back then, they were what we would consider to be flying around in UFOs or UAPs. And back then, they wouldn't have verbalized it that way, but that's what these beings did. But they called them fairies. They called them fae on the Orkney Islands, and they're very similar. These short in stature, dressed in gray, have a gray countenance. And what does it sound like to you? It sounds a lot like what we're going to talk about in a little bit, the grays or the Zetareticulans. So we have seen many different parallels throughout history where certain types of beings are shifting throughout different cultures and changing their names and moving into different types of what they want to be represented by mankind.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Now we're going to move into our third phase, and we're going to talk about fallen angels. And I think we have to do that before we get into the demonic part, the Nephilim. We have to get into the fallen angels. And I want to look at the book of Enoch, chapter 6. And it came to pass when the children of men had multiplied that in those days there were born unto them beautiful and comely daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw and lusted after them and said to one another, come, let us choose wives from among the children of men and beget us children. And Shemjaza, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear you will not indeed agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. They all answered him and said, let us all swear an oath and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. They swear they all together and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And they were all 200 who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon. And they called it Mount Hermon because they had sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. So these watchers, these fallen angels, and I'm sure you've heard me talk about this in length on this channel, but really set the tone of where we're moving here. These fallen angels took women to do what? Have hybrids with them, have children with them, and this spawned this Nephilim, these giants, these men renowned from them. So we have now seen a case scenario of extraterrestrials abducting and taking mankind and creating hybrids with them. Sometimes they have presented themselves as hybrids of humans already that are connecting to humans. Then we moved into the Fae, and we've had the same scenario with the Fae, who are connecting to mankind and having hybrids with them as well. And now we also have these fallen angels who are also very, now we also have these fallen angels who are also in the same camp of quote unquote abducting people throughout centuries to create some sort of hybridized version as well. Now, I want to look at Dante Alighieri, and he was an Italian poet, writer, and philosopher, and he wrote The Divine Comedy, and it is widely considered one of the most important poems in the Middle Ages, and it is one of the greatest literary works in Italian language. Now, in this Divine Comedy, Dante uses circles to make up the nine layers of hell categorized in his book. Now, he also has what is called celestial spheres, and they are utilized to make up the nine layers of paradise. And when we're talking about celestial spheres and celestial orbs, it made me think about Ezekiel 1. And we're going to start with verse 16. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of the barrel, and they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. And when they went up to their four sides, and they turned not when they went, for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. When the living creatures went and the wheels went by them, when the living creatures lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. When those went, and when those stood, and when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. Now, if we're talking about the wheels, we're talking about the Ophanim, which are also called the thrones in angelology. And it did make me think of these celestial spheres, these orbs. And this is also connected to what? The Fae. When we start talking about orbs and we start talking about the connection to orbs and extraterrestrials, and the fact that there are people right now that are on lakesides, that are in the woods, that are praying these orbs in, because what? These orbs are celestial, they're divine, they are connected to what? Divine beings, angelic beings. So if we look to the idea that these things are more of a divine nature, well, now we've got more of an idea as we start unraveling what these extraterrestrials are, or maybe they're more than one thing. So we're moving into this very, very spiritual space now, and we're going to have to talk a little bit about some of these versions throughout occult literature and what they're called in occult literature. Now, I have talked about these subjects in length on this channel, but we're going to have to bring it up again because it's very important to what these occultists have said about these things, because they are very connected to the modern UFO movement and extraterrestrial movement. Now, we have the secret chiefs first, and they are said to be transcendent cosmic authorities, a spiritual hierarchy responsible for the operation and moral calibre of the cosmos. And they actually oversee the esoteric organization of any magic order or lodge system. So it just depends on whatever lodge system we're talking about, right? So we do know one of the big ones is the Golden Dawn, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. And we know that Samuel Liddell Mathers and Aleister Crowley, who spawned out of that, they were big in contacting these secret chiefs. As a matter of fact, Aleister Crowley, in conjunction with Victor Newberg, and they, in 1909, they went out to the desert and they did the 30 Enochian Aethers. Well, actually, it was 28 because Aleister Crowley had already completed two in Mexico. And on the 15th Aether, he actually declared that he was the Magister Templi, and that meant that he was on the level of these secret chiefs. So he became a secret chief out there. So again, this is that connection to this idea of the Great White Brotherhood, which is another version of what the secret chiefs are called. And this spawned directly out of Theosophy and subsequently the New Age. And we have big figures like Helena Blavatsky, who was one of the first to talk about these Mahatmas, this Great White Brotherhood, which also spawned into Alice Bailey and Guy Ballard and Elizabeth Clare Prophet and Benjamin Graham and all of these different ones who have talked about meeting these secret chiefs or Mahatmas or this Great White Brotherhood. And where we really get this verbiage from and the idea that these beings are overseeing us. And we talked about in our last episode about the Sirius star and how that in Freemasonry and Albert Pike talks about how the Sirius star is where the Great White Brotherhood is located. As a matter of fact, Alice Bailey also talks about the exact same thing and how that it is the portal of the gateway from the connection to the lodge here on Earth to the Great White Lodge there in Sirius. And a lot of this was spawned from The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary, written by Carl von Eckerthausen. And if you haven't listened to my series on the occult origins of the Men in Black, go check that out. I go into depth in that book, in that series. But he was one of the first to really talk about who these secret chiefs were, who these Mahatmas were, who the Great White Brotherhood was, and what their connection was to us. But again, they are from where? Elsewhere. They're from another star system. They're from another planet. They are considered to be, from all intents and purposes, extraterrestrials. And this is why when everything started moving into the New Age and Alice Bailey and several others, that they started referring to them as what? Extraterrestrials. And who was another person to start talking about them as extraterrestrials and moving them away from this idea that they were actually angels or demons? Kenneth Grant. Kenneth Grant was another one. And Kenneth Grant got his ideas from Aleister Crowley, who Aleister Crowley in 1918 performed the Amalantra workings with Rhody Minor, and I've talked about that in length on this show too, but is a part of those workings is when he met Lamb, which is one of our first drawings of our modern day gray alien that Aleister Crowley and Kenneth Grant was so obsessed with it. He actually had to pass some tests, but he did pass these tests, and Aleister Crowley gave him the picture that he drew of Lamb. Now, he created what is called the Cult of Lamb after that. And as a matter of fact, from Grant's Typhonian OTO website, right now it talks about that under the curious circumstances, it is the present focus of an extraterrestrial and perhaps transplutonic energy which the OTO is required to communicate at this critical period, for we have now entered the 80s mentioned in the Book of the Law. And it goes on to talk about exploring extraterrestrial spaces in the sense in which the OTO tantric time travelers are exploring the tunnels of Set in an intracosmic and Chthonian capsules. This goes right back to what we were talking about earlier on this episode, these extraterrestrials saying what? They're also time travelers. They can move in and out dimensionally. They can be 700 years in the future while simultaneously being here with us, while simultaneously being in the past. And this is what they've been selling us. They're selling us on the fact that we can also achieve this with this evolutionary process they're trying to sell us. And at the end of the day, it's all connected. And I think one of the things that I have a really tough time with lately is there are people right now who are vehement about these things not being, they are not demons. This is a big one going on right now. This is why I made this episode, is the fact that there are people that are very adamant right now that these things are not demons. Now, again, I'm going to give you my answer at the end of this, but I want to say this. One of the things I've noticed with people that are very adamant about these being extraterrestrial, that these are maybe not good, but they are from another planet, and we had to find some way to coexist with them. They're not very knowledgeable on the occult. They're not very knowledgeable about alchemy. They're not very knowledgeable about Gnostic practices. They're not knowledgeable about these writings and what these people have been writing for centuries. And they have been talking about exactly what we're going through right now with the extraterrestrial movement. And I have a tough time buying into the fact that we can just sit here idly by and say, well, they're just extraterrestrials and yeah, they don't have our best interest at heart, but we can't really do anything. We got to find a way to coexist with them grays. And I just don't think that that is the way we should be approaching this, especially from a spiritual angle. And sadly, some of the people that are pushing this, I have a hard time believing that they believe in a truly supernatural world. And if you profess yourself to be a Christian, what book are you reading? Because when I'm reading that book, it is wholly supernatural. Now, if you say you're not one, that's fine. You don't have to believe in any of this, but it's tough for me when you're sitting there reading these scriptures and you're trying to tell me that it's all metaphorical or this is just their colorful language that they wanted to write about these things. But then yet you want to go on the other hand and say, well, yeah, these Pleiadians are coming down and they're telling us they're going to help us. And we got to find a way to work with them. And I got a tough time with that, a very tough time with that. So we're going to move into the Nephilim section here. And I think we're going to give another section to this. And at the end of this one is when I'll give you my thoughts on what I think about aliens, are they demons? Now, I want to start with Enoch 15, and we'll start with verse 8. And now the giants who are produced from the spirits and flesh shall be called evil spirits upon the earth, and the earth shall be their dwelling. Evil spirits are preceded from their bodies because they are born from men and from the holy watchers, which is beginning a primal origin. And they shall be evil spirits on the earth, and evil spirits shall they be called. As for the spirits of heaven, in heaven shall be their dwelling. But as for the spirits of the earth, which were born upon the earth, on earth shall be their dwelling. And the spirits of the giants afflict, oppress, destroy, attack, do battle, and work destruction on the earth and cause trouble. They take no food, but nevertheless hunger and thirst and cause offenses. And these spirits shall rise up against the children of men and against the women, because they have proceeded from them. So these are the verses that we get the idea from, that the Nephilim, who died during the flood, their spirits had no place to go, and they have now become the demonic spirits that haunt the earth. I want to say this. One thing we haven't really thought about a whole lot, and I know Steve Quayle has talked about this before, and he's an old earth guy, and I'm an old earth guy, and I know Tom Horn is also, you know, may he rest in peace. He was an old earth guy as well. And one of the things that has been suggested is civilizations before Adam, civilizations before that flood, right? And there being demonic entities from that era as well. So can we say that all demonic spirits are the same? I don't know if we can. Now, we can point to these verses here in Enoch and say, well, this is what they are. Maybe that's just a portion of what these demonic spirits are. As a matter of fact, what do we know about interdimensional spirits? Have we even thought about that? I don't think people have. I think they just assume it's from another realm. It's got to be flesh and blood like us. And I don't think it operates that way. And I don't think that we need to think about it that way either. Also, I don't think we need to pinpoint down anything either and think we know it all. That we just know for sure that aliens ain't demons. And I know it. Let me tell you how I know it in a million different syllables. And that's not the way to go here, because while I do think that things are very complex, and I do think that sometimes we throw umbrella terms over certain things because it makes it easier for us to verbalize. I don't necessarily think that it's wrong to say that, well, there's a lot of negative coming out of this camp, so it's demonic, right? So to get to this other idea, and I talked about this in length in my Nephilim Portal Baby series, and we're just going to briefly touch on it here because it needs to be touched on. One of the things I was seeing some people in the space talk about was saying that, well, there's a group of people out there who are suggesting these meat sacks are aliens and that the Nephilim spirits have been put inside of them because they need host bodies. And they kind of said it in a way that was mocking, one, and two, that people weren't very educated to be able to think of something like that. Well, I'm here to tell you again, it goes back to how much of alchemy and the occult do you really know? And it goes into the idea of the moon child of the homunculus. And we've talked about this in length, and it is essential to the meat sack theory because it does exist. The actual way to formulate this meat sack, this shell, this host body has been talked about for centuries. As a matter of fact, it was talked about all the way back to Zosimos of Panopolis, and he was an alchemist and Gnostic mystic back in 300 AD in Roman Egypt. And we know, according to his writings, according to his visions, that he changes into the opposite of himself, into a mutilated anthropareon. And in the Greek, the anthropareon is similar to a homunculus, a diminutive form of a person. As a matter of fact, he speaks about this anthropareon as being a version of himself with a spirit and soul. So here we go with a spirit and soul put into another body. And if we go a little bit further into our good friend Philippus Areolus Theophrastus Bombastus von Hohenheim, or Paracelsus, he was one of the first to map out how to do this. As a matter of fact, he talks about in De Natura Rerum of the Nature of Things, which was written in 1537, how to take the sperm of a man, put it in a sealed cucurbit or a sealed glass vessel for 40 days with the highest degree of putrefaction in the horse's womb or the venter equinus, which would also mean horse's dung. And that would cause this sperm to then gestate into what is considered a man, but transparent without a body. But if it's fed right, the arcanum of human blood, the right amount, and this living human child grows from it and it becomes a small person, a small man or woman. And this small man or woman is also imbued with what? Supernatural powers. So this is not just talked about with Paracelsus, which I've talked about before, but it's also talked about in the Liber Vacae, the Book of the Cow, which is said to be written by Plato, which we don't really know. It's actually more or less written by the Sabians, which were a religious group that are mentioned three times in the Quran. And they map out an entire recipe of how to do it, how to take magical semen and take a cow, again, animal blood, sulfur, a magnet. And what happens is this cow or ewe gives birth to an unformed substance, and it actually grows also into small human. You put it in a glass container and you feed it blood. This is very similar to what Paracelsus was talking about, and it becomes a human. Now, you may say, well, what does this have to do with a Nephilim spirit being attached to it? Well, in the Liber Vacae, it is talked about this humanoid comes in with a fragment of some sort of soul. They say human soul, but we don't know what kind of soul that is. Now, when we get to Crowley's version of what he talks about a homunculus or moon child, he writes in Liber 367 De Homunco of the Homunculus, and I'm not going to go into this in super depth today because I've already done that, but he talks about the gestation period and how to take a soul from somewhere else in the company of angelic beings, and he actually names these angelic beings, Nakael, Raphael, Haniel, Aniel, that need to be present when you're pulling this soul into this body, into this encasement, this shell, that you are going to put this spirit in there, that his version of it is very similar to what we have been talking about when we're talking about meat sacks, when we're talking about the idea of there being some sort of artificial shell made. Listen, we know right now they are cloning all kinds of things. This isn't something that's some sort of clandestine conspiracy theory. We know this. We know that they've cloned all kinds of animals. We know over in China they're making chimeras right now. We know that they are making homunculus right now, ones that look like human beings that have no spirit, no soul. What kind of spirit or soul are they putting into these meat sacks, essentially? And you have to really look at that from an angle of not being a crazy conspiracy theorist, knowing that alchemists have talked about this for centuries, knowing that right now in the scientific realm, they're talking about this regularly in the mainstream. So for someone to say this isn't a possibility, that this isn't even in the realm. As a matter of fact, when we have occultists like Aleister Crowley mapping out how to do it, and he's met a gray, we know for a fact, I just think it comes from the lack of knowledge in this specific field. And I think this is a big part of the field that's constantly missing in people's research when they're looking at the spiritual realm. Because I'm telling you right now, these alchemists, these occultists, they are just as much in tune with the spiritual world, if not more, than Christians are. And I hate to say that, but they are. And I'm not saying they're in tune with the right things. I'm just saying they are more in tune because they believe it's real and they believe what they're doing can work. And frankly, it is working to some extent, right? It might not be working in a way that's good and holy, but it's working. And we need to really look at that aspect of it when we're mapping out this idea of, could meat sacks actually exist? So to slide it into that portion of it, and we're talking about Nephilim, we just broke down meat sacks, the homunculus. Now I want to look at grays, these Zeta Reticulans. And these are the ones that are talked about constantly. And we know that they are human-like, small bodies, smooth gray skin, enlarged hairless heads, large black eyes. We know that one of the earliest abductions that has been publicly known was the Barney and Betty Hill abduction claim. And again, I've talked about that in length. Go check that out. It's very interesting, their interactions with these grays when it happened. But the idea of aliens, and grays typically are brought into this a lot, being demons, actual demons. Well, we need to look at some ufologists, what they've said. We need to look at what some of these researchers who have studied this thoroughly have said too. So we're going to look at John Keel, and he's best known as the author of the Mothman Prophecies. And he actually says millions of people have been affected at least temporarily by UFO contact, and thousands have gone insane and ended up in mental institutions after their experiences with these things begin. Doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound like it's coming from another planet here to help us out. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and he's called the Galileo of ufology, and he's actually the creator of the Hynek classification system, and it classifies UFO encounters based on close encounter of the first, third, or second kind. And he actually says, the conclusion I have come to after all these years is that, first of all, the subject is more complex than any of us imagine. It has paranormal aspects, but certainly it has been very real physical aspects too. He also says that the theory runs up against a very big difficulty, namely that we are seeing too many UFOs. The Earth is only a spot of dust in the universe, what I've been saying. Why are they all coming here if we got this massive universe of galaxies all over the place? Why are they so obsessed with this spot? And he goes on to say, why should it be honored with so many visits? I am more inclined to think in terms of something metaphysical, a sort of parallel reality. And he's not the only one to think like this. As a matter of fact, John Keel goes on to say the UFOs do not seem to exist as tangible, manufactured objects. They do not conform to the natural laws of our environment. They seem to be nothing more than transmogrifications, tailoring themselves to our abilities to understand. The thousands of contacts with the entities indicate that they are liars and put on artists. This is John Keel now, as a ufologist, and he says the UFO manifestations seem to be, by and large, merely minor variations of the age-old, what, demonological phenomenon. Officialdom may feel that if we ignore them long enough, they will go away altogether, taking their place of the vampire myths of the Middle Ages. So here we go. Several top ufologists have equated the act of demonological phenomena throughout history with UFO alien contact with humans, specifically Grays. So again, I don't know what some people out there are listening to or hearing when it comes to these things aren't demons, or at least the possibility of them being demons. I just have a tough time with this because there's so much information and research out there that constitutes this, and we're not even talking about a Christian level. A lot of these guys aren't Christians. They're just equating it to demonology throughout history because what? They're well-versed in the occult. They understand these things have existed throughout centuries and they're not fake. It's not made up. It's not just some quote-unquote mythology. It's real and it's tangible. And they're saying that this phenomenon parallels to demonology of old. And lastly, Keel goes on to say, demonology is just not another crackpotology. It is the ancient and scholarly study of monsters and demons who have seemingly coexisted with man throughout history. Thousands of books have been written on the subject, many of them authored by educated clergymen, scientists, and scholars, and unaccounted numbers of well-documented demonic events are readily available to every researcher. The manifestations and occurrences described in this imposing literature are similar, if not entirely identical, to the UFO phenomena itself. Victims of demonomania possession suffer the very same medical and emotional symptoms as the UFO contactee. The devil and his demons can, according to the literature, manifest themselves in almost any form and can physically imitate anything from angels to horrifying monsters with glowing eyes. Strange objects and entities materialize and dematerialize in these stories, just as the UFOs and their splendid occupants appear and disappear, walk through walls, and perform other natural feats. So, again, if you do the actual research, if you're looking at the occult realm, if you're looking at this literature and you're not dismissing it as garbage truck juice, and you're actually saying these guys might know what they're talking about because these guys have been writing this for centuries. So is it a possibility that aliens are demons? Absolutely. And I'm at the point now, I'm going to tell you what I think about all this, and I'm going to say this. It's complex because I don't think all aliens are alike. I don't even think all Grays are alike. So you know my take on Bigfoot and cryptids and how that Bigfoot isn't always just one thing. I don't think it's always just this flesh and blood thing that's in the woods. Do I think that flesh and blood thing exists? Probably. Is there a metaphysical component to that physical thing? Maybe. Is there a Bigfoot that's more metaphysical? Probably. Is there a Bigfoot that would be in more of what we were just talking about today, the fey realm or the demonic realm? I think people forget that these demonic entities can manifest. They manifested in the Bible. Where's this idea that they can't manifest to our eyesight here in this spectrum? Where's that at? Where's the idea that they couldn't manifest into the object of a gray alien? Now, if we're talking about Grays who people touch, feel, and they seem very physical, then yeah, we may move it into something else. We may say, hey, it could be one of these meat sacks. It could be, dare I say, a fallen angel who shapeshifted into that. Now, is it an extraterrestrial? That's on the lowest part of the totem for me. My biggest issue with these things, which all seem to look alike, being extraterrestrial is they all have the same motivations. They all have the same story. They all have the same spiritual guidance that they want to give us. Nothing good is coming out of them. Even though they may sell us up front some good things, nothing good's coming out of it. So if someone wants to say aliens are demons and put the umbrella term over it, I don't think they're wrong. Now, if you want to get technical and say, are aliens demons? I think it's complex. And I think my answer to that is this. I think it's multi-layered. It's multiple things going on at once. I don't think that everybody's experience is the same thing. I think the problem right now is people are trying to pinpoint it down to one thing, just like they do everything else. Cryptids, cosmology, all these things, right? They try to hammer down things that we can't hammer down. And certain things we can hammer down, right? We know Jesus died on the cross. We know that he went into a tomb. He came out 3 days later. And because of his sacrifice, that we have the opportunity to join his kingdom in a way that we didn't have before. So there are certain things that, you know, I'll die on the hill for. Aliens being demons isn't going to be a hill that I die on, outside of the fact that I can put them in the umbrella of demonic and nefarious, generally speaking, outside of some of the rogue instances that people have seen some strange creature get off a craft and mine something and look at them and roll out. You know, here's the thing you got to think about too. If extraterrestrials are real, if these extraterrestrials are all over the place, why do they all look alike? Wouldn't the components on different planets operate very differently than Earth? Every planet would operate differently. So the creatures that live there would also have to look differently because they would be operating differently to live there. Why do they all look like us? We have to ask that question because at the end of the day, I think that all these possibilities are on the table when it comes to what these beings are. And you know, I like to use the word entities, what these entities are, because again, I don't think it's one thing. I think one person's abduction or contact experience, they could see a Pleiadian. The next person could have a experience and see a Pleiadian. They might not be in contact with the same type of thing. It could be a fae over here manifesting itself into some sort of extraterrestrial, one of these elementals, as Paracelsus would word it. Then over here, we might have a demonic entity doing it or a fallen angel doing it. Or maybe we have one of these intricate meat sacks that I've talked about plenty of times. We may have one of those. It could be many different things. And I think that it's very arrogant of us to try to say, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And these people mean well, but they don't really know what they're talking about. I know. I've done all the research. And I just think it's arrogant. I think that those people could be very right. And you could be very right. Or this other person could be very right about something because you all could be right in the same sphere. However, I'm not in the camp that these things are good. I'm sorry. I'm not. So if that means that aliens are demons because I think they're not good, yeah, they're demons, right? But again, to get technical, no, I don't think they're all demons. But to say that they're not at all would be very, very, very arrogant of us to say. Guys, I had a blast today. I really want to touch on this. I knew it was red hot, and it's something that I have done a ton of research on. So I thought, hey, you know what? I'll give my thoughts on this and say what I think about whether aliens are demons or not. And maybe you guys can let me know down below here on YouTube what you think about them. And maybe I'll get some new ideas too. And guys, I had a blast today. If you can, if you're here on YouTube, go down low, give me a comment, like, subscribe, hit the notifications, share the show. That's the most important thing. If you're on YouTube or Spotify, go give me a 5-star review. If you're on Apple Podcast, go write a review with the 5 stars. It helps the show grow. It gets deeper in the algorithm so more people can get it and then they can share the show. All right, guys, on the way out, we're going to play my song Adios. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
darkness hides everything I love. They hold on a pride, unbalanced and scared. God is living in hell. Every rabbit tail I'm chasing down a corridor seems to lead me to another crumb I can't ignore. What happens when the ceiling is the floor? Sanity lost behind a door. Their goal is to divide your intelligence implied, but I think you're infantile.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humor. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the Savings Challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.